You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi again, MLB.com Extras, American League West Edition. I'm Dave Raymond. Houston continuing to set records in this incredible season. The schedule, a real bugaboo for the Angels and the Oakland A's. Seattle getting some help from the bullpen at long last. And in Texas, a little reminder, every single game matters. That and more, MLB.com Extras, American League West Edition. V-Tags, the first place division-leading Astros, but the lead is down to two as they continue out west in Oakland. What's the general feeling about that? They've led for so long, but they are starting to feel a little bit of heat from behind.
Yeah, they've been in first place most of the year, and you know, you ask the players, are you looking at the scoreboard? Are you worrying about who's behind you? And nobody really is. I mean, I kind of believe them. I mean, I don't think they're spending a whole lot of time worrying about what the Rangers or Angels are doing. I think they're in control here. They know if they win, if they have 500, maybe a little better. If they beat the Rangers or Angels head to head, they're going to win the division. So I think they just adopted the philosophy. You know, why look behind us? When we know what we have to do, and you know, let's just go out and do it. But yes, the Rangers are within two, and they've bounced between two and four games behind them now here for the last few days. I guess you can't count out the Angels yet. But another thing, they have head-to-head meetings with both of these teams, seven against the Rangers. So it's going to come down to those seven games. And, you know, the Astros don't get it done. They have no one to blame but themselves.
Well, that's true. That is certainly a way of looking at it. And, you know, they're not off to a great start in September. It's early. This is a big roadie, though, and a tough time for a road trip of that length. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, you go out to the West Coast, you have the two time zone changes, but then you come back and you're still on the road up in Arlington. And that's just, you know, the fatigue of the road and then staying on the road and ending it up there against that team and under these circumstances, those to me look like, and I know for right now, I think it'll be easy for us to call them the biggest four games of the year. Maybe a week and a half now, we'll be talking about something else, but those look like the biggest four games of the year to me.
Oh, there's no doubt. And, yeah, I mean, you're right. They're going to be coming back to the West Coast and, you know, going back to Central Time Zone. So, you know, they're facing a lot of challenges. They have not played the Rangers very well at all this year. I don't have the season series numbers in front of me, but I know the Rangers have at least one sweep under their belt. And we saw, you know, benches emptied earlier in the year between the Astros and Rangers. So, you know, I think we have a little Texas rivalry brewing, but yeah, these four games coming up in Arlington this week will be absolutely huge, and then the Rangers do have to pay a return visit to Minute Maid Park, and like you said, those games will be even bigger, but the Astros have not played well on the road, they have not played the Rangers very well, so, you know, cause for concern, but, you know, like you said, they do have a two-game lead, so they're the ones in control here.
How big a deal is the Scott Feldman situation? I mean, obviously that's a big guy to lose out of the rotation for the time being. But is there some sense that he still may get back into the rotation before the season's done?
He was supposed to see a doctor while they were in Oakland or San Francisco, and I guess we'll know more at that point. I get the sense that he was going to miss a bit of time, and if you consider he's not throwing right now. When he comes back, he's going to have a throwing program and all that stuff, live BP. I mean, you know, we're up against the clock here, so now you're looking at the end of the season. So it wasn't good what happened to him, and he tried to throw a few days ago in Houston, and his shoulder didn't feel well. So, you know, I'm not a doctor, and I haven't had a diagnosis yet, but just putting two and two together certainly doesn't seem likely that Feldman will be back by the end of the season. Who knows? That could change after he sees a doctor. But good news for the Astros is they did have a six-man rotation. So now they have a five-man rotation that's pretty deep, and they do have another option or two to start if they feel they need another starter. But Feldman had been pitching so well since coming back from the DL, though, off that knee injury. He made six, seven, eight starts, and it was just terrific. And with him pitching like he was, I mean, he really took the rotation to another level. So that really punches a big hole in their rotation. Even though they have five other guys right now they feel good about, but not having a healthy Scott Feldman pitching like the way he did is a big blow.
Yeah, right. I mean, A, because he can be effective, and B, because you go from six to a five. How much concern would there be over, you know, we talk about rhythms, and there's always some rhythm issue with starting pitchers. you know, going from a six-man to a five-man rotation, it's sort of like going back to normal for most people. But do you get the sense that it'll be accepted or felt that way by the guys involved?
Well, I know Dallas Keuchel likes to pitch on the five-man rotation. He's been kind of vocal about that. They do have a couple of off days coming up that they'll be able to use to get the guys rest. I mean, you know, they really wanted to stretch guys out a little bit and have them fresher for the playoffs. We all know they've monitored McCullers' innings, centers in the minor league, so they feel okay with where he's at right now innings-wise. Keuchel is already the career-high innings. Kazmir, of course, has been through it before, but he's had arm problems in the past. Mike Fiers, through the 134-pitch no-hitter, and didn't pitch for another 8 days, and didn't pitch for another week, so they're being very careful with him as well. So, with the off days and having five guys, you know, I think they can work through it. It's going to depend on where they are at the end of the season. If they can clinch the division with three or four games left to go, and then you have the Michael Felices and Vincent Velasquez's and Brian McTaggart starting the final three games of the season, then you rest up these guys for the playoffs. But as of right now, they need every one of these guys because every game is crucial.
CR, first of all, Seattle this time of year should be a nice break from the sometimes oppressive heat around the rest of the country. Is it nice and comfy up there?
Yeah, well, it looks like we're going to have 70-degree weather all week long. So, yeah, they should have a nice day here in Seattle.
See, I remember thinking about those West Coast trips and how valuable they could be in July, August, and let's face it, September, because there is a little something to it, right? Getting out of that heat, letting guys, relax. If it just puts more stress on the body in the heat, but it seems like there's something to those West Coast trips being rejuvenating on some level.
Yeah, Dave. I mean, we left Texas. It was 90 plus degrees, and now we're going to get 70-degree weather. You know, it was nice in San Diego, and Anaheim is always nice. So yeah, I think a good late August, early September road trip for the Rangers is always a nice break from the Texas heat.
3-3 so far on this roadie. They've got starting Monday night, four straight in Seattle. I noticed it's other than that, there's just one road trip remaining for this team. So from that standpoint, the schedule looks like it may play out real well for them. You know, a split in Seattle. Are you happy with a 2-2 coming out of Seattle?
No way. No. Seattle's struggling right now. They're not going to face Iwakuma. They got some rotation issues beyond Felix Hernandez. Rangers need to come in here and take three out of four. They got to win. I mean, this is not the time of the year to be playing 500 baseball. They need to play well here, take at least three out of four, get home, keep themselves in position for those Houston series to matter, Dave. I mean, those are two big series, one in Arlington and one in Houston. And those will probably decide the division title, but they got to stay within striking distance.
Yeah, you're talking about four straight games a week from Monday in Houston, in Arlington against the Astros, all night games. Those are going to be very big. They're very much within striking distance. They continue to get to within two games and maybe drop back three, but they're right there breathing down the Astros' necks. If indeed, to your point, that they need to take three out of four in Seattle, and I can buy that, does that mean there's disappointment in being 3-3 on this road trip thus far?
Yeah, I mean, they lost two out of three to the Angels. Again, David, this is not the time of the year to be playing 500 baseball. You're barely holding on to the second wild card spot. Minnesota's playing really well right now. The Angels are still within striking distance, and you're trying to catch the Astros in the division. So, they really need to, they need a strong September. They need to, play winning baseball. And for the most part, they played good baseball in San Diego, had a good series there. Their offense disappeared in Anaheim, but here in Seattle, they got a chance to face a team that's struggling right now, and they have a chance to, do some damage.
Yeah, I should probably apologize, TR. It's been so long since I've been around a team in contention. I almost lose track of what that competitive edge is like in September. But it is an interesting point because you think of the postseason, that do-or-die mentality, or the best of five, best of seven series. But, you know, really, it starts, I don't know exactly when it starts, but obviously, you know, this early in September, it's already day by day feeling like a do-or-die situation.
Well, it's been like that with this team, you know, for most of the year because they've been, you know, on the edge of getting knocked out of the playoff race almost since June. I mean, they, you know, even at the All-Star break, there were, you know, discussions about, you know, would they trade players like Giovanni Gallardo and things like that. So, you know, these guys have been playing do-or-die baseball for about 3 months, and so far they've handled it well.
Alden, hey, the Angels, as we head down this stretch, they're still in this thing. The AL West, not decided yet, but their schedule, you've been doing some handicapping on this thing. Their schedule doesn't do them any favors.
No, it really doesn't, Dave. And, you know, the sad part for the Angels is, you know, the soft part of their schedule came in August, and they lost 19 games in August. The soft part of their schedule came on the road trip that preceded this homestand right now, and they were only able to win 4 out of 9. And now they're in a situation where they're out of the playoff picture. They have to win, but they also have to beat a lot of really tough teams. The Angels have 8 opponents left, including this Dodgers series that they're playing now. Those 8 opponents entered Tuesday a combined 36 games above 500. That is a daunting stretch for them. The Rangers, whom they were 3.5 back up for the second wild card starting Tuesday, their 8 opponents are a combined 18 games below 500. So this is going to be a really tough stretch for the Angels. I mean, if they end up pulling this out and they sneak into the playoffs, I mean, they will have really earned it. But, you know, we can't stress enough just how debilitating that month of August really was for them, Dave.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's no question. There's no question about that. I guess it also underscores the importance, the urgency, if you will, of this homestand they're currently on with the Dodgers. They've already finished up the Rangers, but they have the Astros coming because it's heavily tilted toward the road once they get through this little homestand.
Yeah, and, you know, they're going to have, you know, they'll have 4 games in Minnesota, who's still ahead of them into the second wild card spot. They're going to have 3 games in Houston, and they're going to finish off the year with 4 games in Arlington. So they're going to have their opportunities on the road, but it's not going to mean much if they don't take care of business here at home against the Dodgers, against the Astros this weekend. That final regular season series against the Rangers, it could be a very compelling matchup, but the Angels have to play really well before them, and they're going to have to survive a really tough stretch.
Well, they did nicely against the Rangers just recently on this homestand, and it seemed like the bottom of the order was a large part of the reason why. You know, it's always odd how those things work out. And then, you know, you get a little taste of Taylor Featherston, who kind of had a big day mixed in there as well. And these are the names that sort of emerge in September. So what can you tell us, maybe some tidbit or something about Taylor Featherston?
Well, he's still learning. I mean, he's still in on-the-job training here. I mean, it was not really an ideal situation for Taylor Featherston. The Angels were really looking for a controllable infielder, and their best route to get one was through the Rule 5 draft. They ended up selecting Taylor Featherston. They loved his upside. They loved his defense. They felt like he was major league ready defensively already. He's got good speed, and they felt like maybe the bat would come along. The problem is that the bat hasn't really come along mostly this season, and now he's been thrust into an everyday role because Johnny Giovitella has been out, and they don't know when he's going to be back. So, I mean, look, there's no question that he could handle himself defensively at any of the 3 infield positions, second base, shortstop, third base. It's taken a while for the bat to come around. A lot of it is because he hadn't played above Double-A before the season, but I would say that a lot of it is also because he didn't really get to play every day. And I think that maybe now that he got every day at bats in AAA when he was on a rehab assignment for a back injury, and now that he's playing every day in the major leagues, I think now the Angels are maybe giving him a chance to maybe hold his head above water at the major league level. And look, and the thing that Mike Socha said is he doesn't feel like he has anybody who could replicate the offensive production that Johnny Giovitella was giving him at second base. So what he's going to do is just go with his best defensive guy. And that's Taylor Featherston. And if he could give them something offensively, it's going to be a huge boost. And we talked before, Dave, about how David Freese's return from the DL lengthens out their lineup a little bit, gives them some power at that number seven spot. What made the Angels so great last year was their offense. They were by far and away the best offense in baseball, and what made that offense so good is that they got so much production from the bottom of their lineup, and that has been really absent all year. And if they could get just a little bit from those seven, eight, and nine hitters, it's going to make a world of difference, especially because Albert Pujols is not really himself right now.
Yeah, you make a good point, too, about Rule 5. One of the, you know, it's so hit or miss sometimes. I think it can almost kill a guy's career sometimes, taken as a Rule 5 guy if you just get hidden on a bench. So nice to see him getting some opportunities and doing something with him. But also, what is the latest with Johnny Giovitella?
Well, he has fourth nerve palsy, which is basically misalignment of his eyes. He woke up a little bit more than 2 weeks ago seeing double, and obviously he was freaked out. He laid back down hoping it would go away. It didn't. He got rushed to the hospital, and you know, it took a few days for them to rule out a few more serious conditions, and they came to the conclusion that he had this fourth nerve palsy, which, you know, the great thing about this is it's not life-threatening and it's not permanent. It's going to go away. But the problem is knowing when it's going to go away. Johnny Giovitella has no idea. He's just got to hope that it just goes away really soon because, you know, we're running out of games here. And, you know, he can't, every time he looks to his left, he sees double. If he looks to his right, if he looks up, he's fine. If he turns his eyes to the left, he sees double. And obviously he's a right-handed hitter, so he can't hit any live pitching. He hasn't been able to hit. He hasn't been able to do anything with the bat besides swing off a tee for the last 3 or 4 weeks since he's been on the disabled list. And, you know, and the one thing he said is, you know, I consider myself a fairly tough guy. I can play through injuries, but this is one of those things where there's no toughing it out. There's really nothing that I can do. All I got to do is hope that I wake up one day and it's just not there. And so until then, he's just got to wait this whole thing out. It's a scary thing, just health-wise, for him, but he feels like he's going to get over it eventually. The problem is that there's just really no treatment for something like this.
Man, Greg, I'm catching these Mariners. They are red hot. They haven't lost in September. They're doing it all on the road. Now they come home. They've got four games with the Texas Rangers. The team very much in the mix. And I know that, you know, fans in Seattle have probably moved on to other things at this point, but it seems like this would, in other years, perhaps, be a really fun time of year, man. A contending team coming in, the team playing really well. But I'm imagining there won't be huge crowds to enjoy the gorgeous weather.
Well, it's September, and it's football season. The Seahawks are playing, so you start to see some of that shift for sure. But the Mariners are playing some good baseball. They got some fun stories right now. Some kids coming up from Tacoma that have really kind of lit a fire and helped provide a little energy and. And they are on a five-game winning streak, and it's the longest winning streak they've had since last September. So the kind of thing they were hoping to see earlier, and here it is a little late, but better late than never.
Yeah, man. And you know what? With a couple of weeks left in the season, we're talking about a Mariners team that currently has a winning record since the All-Star break. And I know, again, we're reaching maybe a little bit. This is nowhere near where this Mariners team had hoped to be. But, you know, these are encouraging signs. We talked last week about them being kind of a sweeping giant for whomever the next general manager is. And I you know, I think that's further proof that there's still a lot to work with here.
Yeah, it's funny, Dave. And I guess the hard part is you go, why wasn't this here, you know, in the first half? But since the All-Star break, it's interesting. Before the All-Star break, they hit .236. And since the All-Star break, hitting .271, that's a huge difference. I mean, three and a half runs a game before the All-Star break, almost five after the break, and those are numbers some of the best in baseball in the second half. And you know, that's what we expected. That's what this club is supposed to be. You know, and a lot of it's Cano starting to hit and doing what they expected, and Cruz been on a pretty good roll still, and guys chipping in where they. Around them, and Seager hitting very well, and they brought up this kid, Ketel Marte, who's really kind of sparked things at the top of the lineup. So, yeah, those are the pieces you want to see, and if you believe in the second half, and why not? It's not just a couple weeks here. It's not a five-game win streak. It's been since the second half they've been putting up those numbers and since the All-Star break, and that's really what you wanted to see, and it hasn't all added up perfectly because about the time they did that, the bullpen started to crumble, and they got some guys hurt in the rotation. Things not perfect, but you do like what you've seen from that offense, and you like to think you could build on that going forward.
Yeah. I mean, given the amount of time we spent talking about that offense in the first half, there's no doubt that that is, you know, really encouraging. And I think for fans, right, some have checked out, as we mentioned, but I think those real fans that are invested for the long haul, it's just got to be such a relief, you know, and give them such excitement to see a team play better over a long stretch in the second half, see that offense come back to the form they thought it would be. And then, you know, you're getting – the other thing is when you bring some of these young kids up and you get a chance to look at them, and maybe if you want to call it an audition, you get to see, you know, maybe what some of the future holds. And to that end, there's been some excitement there for this team.
Well, there's no doubt, Dave. And yeah, I mean, it is an audition. They want to see what some of these kids can do. And certainly they've seen a lot from Ketel Marte, as I mentioned, and 18 and 12 since they put him on the top of the order. And he has made a difference. He's got on base. He's got some speed, and it's set things up for Seager, batting second behind him. You know, you get a guy on base can run a little bit, and you hit him two. You get a few more fastballs, and Seager's been taking advantage of that. He's a guy who gets fastball, and he knows what to do with it. And certainly, you know, Cano's hit 328 since the start of July, and that's kind of the Cano you expected. But the young guys, as you mentioned, coming up, got a couple of interesting stories. The Sean O'Malley, and I call him a kid, but he's 27. He's been banging around the minors quite a while. And had a cup of coffee with the Angels last year, and they brought him up. September 1st brought him up in his first three games, 6-for-8, Dave, and he's been on base 10 out of 12 times. I think his on-base percentage is 833 or something. And I'm guessing that might be tough to maintain over the course of a long time. But sure, it's fun to see a guy come up and contribute like that. He's a little guy. He's like 5'10", 175. And second game, he jacks one out at Oakland for a home run, his first career home run. And these are fun things to see. I mean, I talked to him afterwards. He's been in BP all week, and Oakland didn't hit a home run in batting practice the whole week, and gets in a game and puts one over the fence. And he was going so fast, Dave. He was at second base before the umpire started signaling he had a home run. He was just hauling butt, and fun to see a kid come up like that and just making an impact. He's a local kid from Kennewick, Washington, and kind of the kid next door. He looks like the kid next door, and he literally lived next door to Seattle, about a 4-hour drive. Came over with his folks growing up once in a while and watch a game at Safeco, and just kind of living that dream. It's kind of those fun stories you see in baseball, and you got to love it.
And Jahane, lo and behold, here we are, just after Labor Day, and you got a laborious one on Labor Day, a one-run victory for the Oakland A's. Did it feel like one of those hard-fought one-run victories?
It really did. It actually felt like, you know, a game that we're used to seeing the A's play last year or the season before. It was just that type of game where, you know, they showed their resiliency. They had guys like Coco Crisp and Sean Doolittle contributing, you know, guys that have been on the DL for the majority of the season. And you see Coco come up big and in a pinch hit spot with the bases loaded, drives in two runs to get a 6-run inning going. And then you know, they took a 1-run lead into the ninth and had their guy Doolittle back out on the mound for the first time. In a save situation in a long time. And he got his first save, needed just 5 pitches. It felt like old times. And I think a lot of the guys were saying that, and you know, obviously a different year, a different tune to this year, but it's always good to see, especially at this time of year. I mean, you know, Bob Melvin will be the first to admit, you know, there's, you know, it could be easy to back down, but there's a lot of guys on this team that do have something to play for, a lot of the young guys. And at this time of year, you know, the effort's there, and that's kind of all you can ask for. You know, obviously, the season's long, and most of it hasn't gone the A's way. But those types of games, I mean, that's what kind of keeps them going right now. You know, you see those silver linings every so often, and there were a lot of those yesterday, and it really just kind of keeps, you know, things loose in the clubhouse when it could be dull and bad this time of year. And you know, they're showing their resiliency, and I think that's what's been there all season, and really, you know, those are the type of things you look for from a team like this.
Yeah, well, it was almost really like two or three one-run victories wrapped up in that one win, a 10-9 win. But interesting stuff about Doolittle being very sharp at the end. Of course, the game was played without Stephen Vogt, who took a foul tip in the groin the day before. And I mean, he stayed at home for the game. That was kind of a brutal scene. And any additional updates on how he's doing?
No, he's resting at home. Melvin keeps saying as comfortably as he can. You can imagine not a comfortable situation anyway, but he's at home. He underwent some tests, and the tests showed no fracture, no rupture, nothing. So that's good to hear. And I think he was going to undergo some more tests just because there were a lot of swelling, and they wanted to make sure that they didn't miss anything. There's a chance he could be back out at the ballpark today. Of course, not in the lineup. I don't think we'll see him in the lineup for at least a few days. But he could be out there. You also wouldn't blame him if he stayed at home one more day to rest. And I know everyone's kind of sending good thoughts his way. And in the meantime, it gives a guy, Carson Blair, maybe an opportunity. He'll kind of be acting as the backup to Josh Fagley. And really he's an interesting story. A draft pick by the Red Sox a long time ago, and before the season had never played, he'd only played about 17 games above Class A. So, a good story for him. Showed up in spring training, kind of quietly impressed with his catching skills, throwing skills, and was one of the few final call-ups this past week, and entered the game for Vogt as a defensive replacement. And so we could see him get a start here in the next few days. So he made his big league debut. So it's one of those things where, as much as everyone was feeling for Vogt, you also had to feel good for a guy like Carson Blair. And but I know that everyone is wishing Vogt well. And it was good to see him. I think he tweeted out the other day, just thanking fans for all of the support and positive thoughts. And he was doing okay. So could be worse, but still not fun.
We can't do anymore. Go home. It's over.